Pleasure to have Jens Hoffer here. I was thinking of an introduction for you, and I thought you might be one of the first people to put at least the matrix into M-theory, if not the membranes too. Anyway, so we're going to give a talk today about the fundamental structures of membranes.
Or M-theory actually is the official title. Well, thanks very much. I do want to talk about two new structures I found, but of course there always has to be an introduction and some perspective. There is a very nice formula. If you discuss extended objects, meaning you take an spatially m-dimensionally extended object, let it move in the space-time, and then consider the volume, stationary points of the volume functional of the manifold swept out in space-time, then there is a very nice formula for the relativistic invariant mass squared of that object. And maybe I start with that. So you have coordinates x, momenta p. Kinetic energy is completely canonical. And then the potential energy, which in string theory is x prime or integral x prime squared, is polynomial of degree 2m. And the only thing that enters are certain structure constants of volume-preserving diffeomorphisms. And I just write it down. So there are some numbers, g alpha beta many betas, and then g alpha many gammas, and then the coordinates x beta 1 dot x gamma 1 times, and so on, x beta m dot x gamma m. So m is the dimension of the object, and this is the formula, and the g's are given as integrals over some orthonormal set of eigenfunctions on your base manifold. I mean, you describe the m-dimensional extended object by some m-dimensional manifold. For instance, for m equals 2, it would be the sphere or a torus or higher genus surface. And you have some functions, y alpha. And then you multiply with some kind of Nambu bracket. Epsilon a1 am dA1 y alpha 1 dAm y alpha m dm phi. So, and that's all. And the point, I mean, there will be quite a number of complicated or messy formulas, but I start with this because this is not that complicated. And in particular, if it was possible to make sense of this quantum mechanically, or to think of x and p as operators, despite the fact that there are infinitely many, then, there are no boundary conditions, and all you want to know is the spectrum of this object. And one of the two things, why I said fundamental structures, is that I see some remote hope, actually, to get at the spectrum of this object in an algebraic way, like in the hydrogen atom with a dynamical symmetry. And that dynamical symmetry I found recently I gave a course on on extended objects, and then I thought I have to also talk about standard things, which I actually don't know so well. I never worked on string theory. So I looked up the calculations for the critical dimension for bosonic strings. And then, of course, I didn't understand it first and tried to understand. Then I realized something which actually is existent in all dimensions. And because in string theory you don't need it, but apparently it has even there been overlooked. And it could be quite useful for the higher dimensional extended objects. Okay, so of course there are some constraints and symmetries of this, obvious rotational symmetry. The index I is a spatial index, and this will be derived in some kind of light cone formulation, which means that I takes if the space-time dimension is d, then it takes d minus 2 values. So I goes from 1 to d minus 2, and alpha goes from 1 to infinity. So there are no zero modes. That's why this this is the internal mass squared. Okay, so now the second part of the introduction. Why consider it at all or so, or a little bit, some pictures. So if you have a point particle, this is, of course, if I look at the audience, really unnecessary, but, well, so m equals 0 would be the point particle, and already there are actually two ways to view the problem. It's just a geodesic between two points A and B. And there is the initial value problem and the boundary problem. And if you really think about it mathematically, of course, there are already zillions of questions, and this is a non-trivial aspect. And for the higher dimensional object, so you take a string, m equals 1, which evolves, there are always these two points of view. Either you say, I want to come from here to here, that's the boundary value problem. I want a world sheet which has this as the boundary. Or I take the initial value problem, I start at a point A with a certain velocity, and then I look what happens. So, and I will take more, I mean, it's somewhat easier to take this point of view. So for the membrane, I have a two-dimensional surface, m equals 2, and we would prescribe the initial position and then some initial velocity field, particularly simple in co-dimension 1, but otherwise just the same. And then you want to know what happens. And classically, this is a horribly complicated problem, already classically, because the equations are so highly nonlinear, and so far, for higher dimension extended objects, nobody has found some nice gauge or transformation to linear equations.
Yes?
Yes?
Just to your formula, right?
Yeah.
I mean, for the string, I expect something like x prime squared.
Yes. So for the string,
is it there somewhere?
So, maybe right here, because I have problems with my back, which is also a reason why I'm always well prepared because I know the things, but I would have prepared a little bit more. So for the string, g alpha beta would be integral y alpha y beta prime, according to this formula. So we would have integral y alpha of phi y beta prime, integral y alpha of phi tilde y gamma prime.
But just a moment, didn't you say the y's were the...
The y's are the eigenfunctions. So these integrals would be from 0 to 2 pi for a closed string. And then we have x beta dot x gamma for the string. And then you use the fact that they are also normal, so the sum over alpha gives the delta function. So this is equal to integral x prime squared. And actually there's a small question with the density. I mean, actually over rho, but I didn't want to talk about the rho at the beginning. And it's never, in string theory, you don't need it because you can rescale your parameters so that you don't need this density, which actually in a clumsy way enters these formulas. If you write it with Nambu brackets, actually also you need always, when you define the eigenfunctions, these y alphas to be also normal, you actually need some density, and I will come to that a little bit later. Okay, so that's, is it okay now? And for the membrane, you would just get 1/2 g alpha beta gamma g alpha beta prime gamma prime. I'm now changing the index notation, x beta dot x beta prime x gamma dot x gamma prime, and that's the Poisson bracket square. That's a half. Some I smaller than j, which, and these are the structure constants of error-preserving diffeomorphisms for the membrane case,
And this then in the matrix approximation becomes the famous minus trace xi xj, which Goldstein and I derived in 1980.
Okay, so let me, time's
valuable.
So that's the picture, and the so this sweep, these objects sweep out some manifold in space-time. Let's call it curly M, which is M plus one dimensional. And then the volume of that in a parametric way, I mean, it's just general Nambu-Goto action or Dirac action, integral square root of G. The determinant of the space-time metric on that manifold M induced from space-time. And I have M plus one coordinates phi. So I have one extra one describing time. And the equations of motion would be the Laplacian on that manifold M acting on the embedding coordinates x mu as functions of all the parameters equal to zero. And if I take my space-time to be flat, then I just get the ordinary expression. Otherwise, I get some Christoffel symbol. So classically, these are the equations I have to solve, where this G is the determinant of G alpha beta, and that's defined as dx mu d phi alpha dx mu d phi beta eta mu nu, which in general could depend on x, and some of the formulations, which hopefully I will mention at the end, would also allow this non-flat background, but at the moment I just take this to be 1 minus 1 in my convention, flat. And then you get these equations, and g upper alpha beta is the inverse of this m plus 1 times m plus 1 matrix. Okay, now maybe quick derivation of this formula. That's about 15 years old. I mean, the beginning was my thesis with, I was a student of Jeffrey Goldstone around 1980. We mostly worked on the membrane. Maybe, in the literature, really, I think I wrote it first down 10 years ago in a paper called Membranes and Matrix Model. But I also wrote it 5 years earlier in... where I thought about Nambu brackets or M-linear structures. This is, both are on the web. And so let me roughly derive. And the reason is not, it's for such a talk, of course, not so important because you know these things and you can believe me that you get it. But I need some objects in the derivation which are very relevant for the Lorentz invariance of this object, and which are intimately related to this dynamical symmetry. So I have to introduce some things anyway. So what are they? I go to light cone coordinates. Light cone gauge choice. I choose phi zero, one of my parameters on the which I use to describe my world volume, to be x0 plus xd minus 1. And my convention is no square root of 2, so I put a 2 there, and then the x minus has no 2. And this is my light cone time. I call it tau. And furthermore, I choose this metric to be block diagonal. So g0b, b from 1 to m, I choose to be 0. And then, you see, you have this big Laplacian acting on x mu. This stands for this operator here. And because tau is just a linear combination, so you also know that Laplace tau is zero. And that gives a conservation law in the gauge where the metric is block diagonal. And the statement then is that d by d tau of square root of g over 2 zeta dot minus x dot squared is time independent. Now g is the determinant of the spatial metric, dax dot dbx. So x is that x. It's a d minus 2 vector. And dA means d by d phi A. And the so here alpha and beta takes values from 0 to m. And these AB are the differentiations with respect to the spatial phis, which in the original picture of we, as Lorentz observers, see something evolving in front of our eyes are the parameters for the spatial extension of these objects. Now, zeta is the last component. So we have this, then we have the coordinates xi. Which form this vector x. And then the last combination, x0 minus xd minus 2, which usually is called x minus, I call zeta. And that's this zeta which enters. OK. And now, because this is a conserved quantity, the second order equation becomes the first order equation. I give this a name. I call this rho minus. Which, because it doesn't depend on phi 0, depends only on the spatial phis. And then I split the rho minus. I don't have to do it at this point, but for later convenience, I split it into something which has integral 1, which I call rho, and then this. And this object I will call eta. That's the canonical conjugate variable later to the zero mode of this zeta. And this is usually called in string literature p plus in a canonical formulation. And this rho now is a non-dynamical density of unit weight. The integral of rho is 1. And that rho is the one which I will use here. Now you could say, wait a minute, but then this rho, this which looks completely kinematical, has sort of a dynamical touch. You need to know what the initial condition of your manifold, of your m-dimensional extended object is. But then there comes a nice theorem by Moser in the 60s that any two densities on a compact manifold are equivalent except their integral. So if you normalize rho to have an integral 1, you can, by change of parameters, transform any rho to any other rho which has integral 1. And that sort of de-dynamitizes this rho which enters there and makes it a completely kinetical rho, which for reasons of invariance under diffeomorphisms, you need a rho because you need a density to integrate functions. And later, the crucial thing will be also the Laplacian on this manifold, on the parameter space. That's why I gave that Laplacian triple. And the y alphas, I conveniently will later choose to be eigenfunctions of the Laplacian on this manifold, the phi parameter space manifold, with eigenvalues mu, minus mu, to make the mu's positive. And this Laplacian is 1 over square root of h dA of some fiducial metric, HAB. And the square root of the determinant of that metric is this rho. So this rho enters later in divergence-free conditions and in many places. But I was hiding it at the beginning, and this formula doesn't need a rho because the derivatives give you naturally a rho if this epsilon is the numerical epsilon and the non-densitized epsilon. Okay, now, to hurry to, we have to get to zeta and to the Lorentz generators. Okay, so we have these equations. Then you have the equations Laplace x is 0, I mean the spatial parts. And because of this nice block diagonality, these equations split time and space in a nice way. So you get here 1 over rho dA ggAB over rho dbx, where this g is, that's gab, And this is now some kind of spatial Laplacian, which is x-dependent. So this is nonlinear in x. This is just a kinematical Laplacian. Yeah. Okay, so this, and then of course you have Laplace theta equal to 0. So if you want to know the space-time manifold, you have to reconstruct zeta or x minus, because it tells you how this object looks. And that has to satisfy that also, but that follows, actually. This is not independent. If the x satisfy that, and zeta is enters here, and this condition, which tells you that dA zeta is times eta is p dAx over rho. So in Hamiltonian formulation, to which I will write down in a moment, basically p is x dot. So this is exactly the same than this condition. And the idea is, if you know the motion of x and p from this object, classically, then you can reconstruct zeta from these equation and this equation. Now, these equations, however, there are consistencies. I mean, if I turn around this equation to eliminate and calculate zeta in terms of this, I get the equation that zeta dot is p squared plus g over 2 rho squared. Then the dA of this has to give the dot of that, but that's guaranteed if you know that this is true. But then you have the consistency of these conditions. And these lead to the constraints, which you later have to add or supplement this m squared with, namely that the p, general x and p don't satisfy these equations. I mean, the dB of this has to be the dA of the corresponding B equation. So the conditions you get are these very important constraints. Maybe I write them down there, that the integral of a vector of some vector field FA dm phi must be 0 whenever F is divergence free. And you need covariant derivatives because this phi space may be curved and is curved in higher dimensions. So the meaning of this is just 1 over rho normal derivative of rho FA equal to 0. Now, this, for the string case, is just the level matching condition. Integral Px prime is 0. For higher dimensions, this becomes very substantial conditions, which in principle you could use. So this constrains your phase space. These are the generators, the FAs, which are divergence-free, are the generators of, let's take now for simplicity, the two-dimensional case, error-preserving diffeomorphisms. In any case, for any M, they form a Lie algebra, and they commute with this object. So you want to constrain this by this condition. And for M equals 2, for instance, so for m equals 1, maybe on this board, the only condition becomes px prime over rho d phi is 0. Because the only divergence-free object is f is 1 over rho. And then you get p over rho and x prime. And that's the level matching condition. Now, for m equals 2, you get conditions like the g alpha beta gamma x beta dot p gamma equal to 0, which after the matrix approximation become the Gauss law. while the area-preserving diffeomorphisms become SUN symmetry. But there are also other constraints which involve harmonic vector fields for higher genus surfaces. Well, anyway, now there's one piece. Sorry, I pedagogically not completely ideal, because I use P here, but I was giving the Lagrangian derivation here now. The point is that I can describe these equations. These are the ones I have to solve. These are the real dynamical equations by Hamiltonian. And the Hamiltonian, I write H minus because it's sort of corresponding to the X plus time evolution, is integral P squared plus G over rho dm phi. So this generates the time evolution for a general m-dimensional extended object. And eta and rho are as defined. And the equations now become x dot is d by dp of this. So x dot is p over eta rho. So in the original, it would have been better if I had written here the x dot expression. Then there was no eta. But then when you replace x dot by p, eta and rho enters, because p is a density and rho is a density. So the ratio is again a function. And now this Hamiltonian, this is, unfortunately, I need it. Otherwise, I wouldn't do so detailed derivation, is depending now on the phase space is all the transverse fields with their canonical momenta, but two discrete degrees of freedom left, namely eta and the zero mode of zeta. You see, the equations from which I determine zeta, which doesn't enter here, I mean, this Hamiltonian basically involves only the transverse fields, as we know from string theory and many, I'm from other extended objects also. This is not new. But we have to reconstruct zeta. We can do it, but we have no chance to get the zero mode because only derivatives enter. Zeta dot d zeta by d phi am. So there is the zero mode, which is usually called big X minus, and this is called big P plus, these two objects. And this still depends on it. Now, if I go to the invariant mass squared, the eta and zeta zero disappear because the invariant internal mass squared is P mu P mu, which in light cone version is 2P plus P minus minus transverse P. P minus is this. P plus is eta, so the eta cancels, the 2 cancels. And the subtraction of this takes away the zero mode from this term. So integral P squared, I expand now, x is zero mode plus sum alpha from 1 to infinity, x alpha y alpha of phi, and time. And P over rho is equal to total momentum plus sum alpha from 1 to infinity, non-zero mode, P alpha, y alpha of phi. Then these modes are canonical conjugate. These are the objects which enter here. So, and then the term which it contains the zero mode is subtracted in the formula for m squared. So this is now basically a full derivation of this formula. And I'm using the fact that determinants are always squares of Nambu brackets. So there's a nice formula. Any determinant is the sum of Nambu brackets. Where this is this object here. It's just a totally anti-symmetrized multilinear object. Okay, now this all introduction half is over. Now the two structures. So the first one is the dynamical symmetry. It's the second one I want to come to or explain is the generalization of Yura-Zoro algebra. And the point is that actually these zetas, if you calculate the Poisson bracket of the zeta field with itself, it closes, it forms an algebra. For the string, it gives the Yura-Zoro algebra, and for the higher dimensional, it gives another algebra, and it's very easy to calculate the structure constant. So now, now time. Okay, so you. All right, so we have this formula. We have as symmetries, obviously, the angular momentum. I mean, in coordinates, this would be xi alpha, pj alpha, and so on, plus zero mods. And then we have these constraints, this condition. Sorry, chalk, colored chalk. This condition. And this leads to things like this. Or in general, x beta times p gamma times g with two indices contracted and the rest free, this g. And they commute with m squared and among themselves form a Lie algebra. But then there is the famous mi minus. So the mi minus is the general formula mu nu is x mu p nu minus x nu p mu. So mi minus is integral xi p minus density. Now the p minus density is this. So this is integral Hamiltonian density dm phi. So curly h is this object times 1 over 2 eta. So that enters. That's a nonlinear part. Minus pi times x minus. And x minus is zeta. And these have to commute. Of course, they also have to satisfy all the other necessary conditions, but they are somewhat trivial or easy to show.
The I and J run over
the transverse coordinate. Yeah. There's also an mi plus and an m plus minus, but they are less critical. The m plus minus is eta times zeta 0. Things like that. Now, in order to check this, in order to check the Lorentz invariance, where this symbol, by the way, means both classical and quantum. I mean, first classical and then hopefully in the quantum world. I don't write Poisson brackets in the classical case because I have this Poisson bracket for the membrane. That's why I just use. This doesn't necessarily mean quantum because the problem is to define this quantum mechanically. This will be the big problem. And there are surprises. This to show this for these objects is a nightmare. It's a really long calculation, very difficult. And you need to explicitly calculate zeta in terms of p and x. And so zeta. Okay, now I show the transparency. So this was done. So need. Zeta. So it will be of this form, zeta 0 plus 1 over eta, some Green's function. And that was derived in the mid-80s by Goldstone. where G is the Green's function, sum over alpha, y alpha of phi, y alpha of phi tilde, minus over mu alpha. So Laplace G is delta function minus 1 and some other conditions. So zeta is linear in x and p, but it's non-local. So when you do this calculation, you have to use all, and I mean not just integrations by part, but it's really, really tricky. And I just wanted to show the notes, because they are otherwise not on the internet or so. So, other way. Thank you. Ah, it's the wrong one.
Just to get clear what you're showing, it's that this commutator is your Poisson bracket.
Yeah, so I'm showing you, just give you an idea what is involved. And could you turn off the light for a moment so that we can see? So in the mid-80s, I don't know, 85, 86 or so, it's probably 85, Goldstone sent me these notes out of bad conscience because, well, that's a long story. And so quite funny, the following classical calculations correspond to manifold of any dimension. And he then, very eccentric, funny statement, don't try to follow details. What's the use of sending notes if you're not supposed to follow the details? So then, here you see in the middle what I wrote down on the board. Z is zeta 0, and then this pdx with the Green's function. And then he explicitly, I just show you, I mean, he wrote down all the things you have to check. So he checked, what he did is, he proved the Lorentz, I mean, we know it, it has to be there, but it's highly non-trivial to show it, to make sure, to check it, that this formulation is actually Lorentz invariant, and that this m squared commutes with the full Lorentz generators. And so he calculated all these Poisson brackets here in below, and the last one is the difficult, mi minus, mj minus. So the other ones are fairly easy, mi plus, mi minus, p minus. And the difficulty is always to use these constraints, the volume-preserving diffeomorphisms. If you don't use them, you don't get zero, or you don't get the commutation relations. And then, so 8 pages. And then the last one is this one, mi minus with mj minus. And I have many different ways of doing it, but to actually follow this is, so on 2 pages he got the result, but it's very difficult. Now, I didn't do anything with these notes, thanks, maybe light again, but they did find their way into the literature because I was in Karlsruhe at that time. And there was a student of Hermann Nicolai, Uli Marquardt, who was interested in Lorentz invariance. So I gave them the notes of Goldstone.
Them being Marquardt and Scholl.
And, sorry?
Scholl.
Marquardt and Scholl had written something on operator product expansion. And that was their original work. And then they wrote a paper which is now the standard reference for membrane Lorentz invariants, called array-preserving diffeomorphisms and supermembrane Lorentz invariants. That was Bernard, De Witt, Uli Marquardt, and Nicolai. And they just did what Goldstone did, but for the supermembrane. And so you can do the same thing for the supermembrane and show, by adding some terms here, that this formulation is Lorentz invariant. Now I come finally to these new things, apart from that this is not so apparent in the literature, that this is a nice expression, actually. So the point comes now when you split zero modes and non-zero modes. So that if you split now, you first single out the zero modes. If both parts don't depend on phi, you obviously get a term big xi times total Hamiltonian minus total momentum times zero mode of zeta. And then you get a term where you have no zero modes left. But the interesting thing is there's a linear term. Both from h minus, because p squared, the density, if one of the terms is phi dependent and the other one is phi independent, you can still get something non-zero by multiplying with the non-zero part of xi. And this magically combines with the linear term in zeta. Now, the zero mode of x doesn't enter, because there's a derivative. But if you take the zero mode of p here, the Laplace, the Nabla goes here, you get the Laplace x, you integrate by parts, use Laplace g as delta function, and you get basically just px. And the linear term combines, the two linear terms combine into internal angular momentum times total momentum over eta. Now, if you know, so these are easy terms. These are even worse than Goldstone's calculation. If I call this term, maybe I want to take out a factor to eta. And then I call this I minus with two errors. This was the total mi minus, which has to commute. And this is the internal mi minus, this part, without the eta. Now, believing Goldstone's calculation and simply calculating what these things do with themselves when you commute and what this does with that, you can, in two lines, deduce what these internal things have to do. And what you find is that the internal momenta, the internal mi minus objects, which of course either have to give zero. If they don't give zero, it must come in mij. That's clear, the internal angular momentum because of index structure. But the unexpected and interesting thing is you get the total mass squared entering here, and a factor of 4. Now, so you get the object which you want to study. I mean, the thing you want in the quantum theory is the spectrum of m squared. You get it as a structure constant of a finite dimensional Lie algebra, like in the hydrogen atom. Mi minus is a Lenz-Runge vector. Mij is just this, and m squared in the hydrogen atom context is the ordinary Hamiltonian of the hydrogen atom. So you now have following formulas. Internal mij with internal mkl gives, as usual, delta jk mil plus minus 3 more. And the mi minus transformed as a vector. Now, you could now take a new m, let's say m tilde, and divide by square root of m squared. Then it doesn't change anything here, because this is linear in mi minus. Here mi minus is not there anyway, but if you divide by the square root of m squared, this goes away. And then you have an ordinary SOD minus 1. Now there's one simple, but for me not important, but also nice point. Usually people in string theory, they always make a big effort to show that the states in the Lipkin business form multiplets under SOD minus 1, because the explicit symmetry is only SOD minus 2. And this is explicit here. It has to be like that. But the more important thing is now that it's my hope that, I mean, this is identical. By the way, if in dimension 4, these commutation relations are exactly the same than of the hydrogen atom in 3 dimensions. Now, what's the good news, the bad news? Now,
isn't the bad news supposed to be zero? Yeah? That commutator, the first commutator. Lorentz invariance requires that to be zero.
No, sorry. The Lorentz invariant requires that the total thing with zero modes is zero. And what I'm saying is that the commutation, the zero here is the same than the m squared here. By simply calculating what do the zero modes do with the rest. And okay, now you see classically the membrane or this membrane depends on initial conditions, anything. But quantum mechanically, despite all these formulas, I mean, what we want. We want numbers here. We want the spectrum of this difficult object. Now, what can these numbers at all depend on? Well, they can only depend on the topology and the dimension of the object. Because the rest, all these gauge fixes, has to disappear. And now this is even further. I mean, in these formulas, not even the dimension of the extended object enters. You see, this algebra is the same for a string, for a membrane, for a three-brain, for a five-brain, anything. Now, on the other hand, of course, that's bad news, because m squared should depend on that. So the point is, now we know that all representations of a compact, or compact Lie algebra, or corresponding to a compact group, are finite all unitary representations are finite dimensional. So we actually know that this MI minus, although it's a horrible object, non-local in X and P, has these infinite modes, will decompose into finite dimensional ordinary blocks of representations SOD minus 1. Now the information, what are the blocks? What are the dimensionalities of the blocks and the multiplicities? That information is the one given by the topology and the dimension of the object. The only problem is to get it. And in the hydrogen atom, you don't get it immediately from this algebra. You need additional relations between MI minus, I mean, the Lenz-Runge vector and angular momentum and the Hamiltonian. To figure out what representation, that's precisely how you figure it out. Now, I mean, the chance is low that you can do it here, but I'm always optimistic in these things. So I think it's very worse because, I'm losing time. I have to come to this generalization of Virasoro algebra. So that's the dynamical symmetry. Now the Virasoro.
Just a second. I mean, in the hydrogen atom, you're discussing, that's, and the SO3 is just.
It becomes SO4.
Then now you want to go to the SO4 dynamical symmetry
right.
Involving Hamiltonian.
Yeah.
Now here, SOD minus 1, that's just rotational invariance.
No, but in the hydrogen atom, it's also SO4.
So where's the, there's nothing, not much extra.
D is 3.
Yeah.
D is 5, actually. D is 5 in the hydrogen atom. This is SO4.
Yeah, SO4.
Yeah. Okay, maybe we can discuss this in the time after the talk. Question. Please ask or comment on this. Now, the Virasoro algebra comes from, if you now calculate, so what's zeta alpha? That's integral zeta times y alpha. Now, if I integrate, the zeta 0 goes away, so I better multiply with eta. I call this L alpha. And then I pick out the alpha term in this Green's function. So what I get is minus, by integrating by parts, I actually get this, grad y alpha over mu alpha p dAx dm phi. Then I just calculate the Poisson bracket of these two things. And so I have a formula, vector field times pdx commuted with vector fields pdx gives vector field times pdx. That's diffeomorphism algebra. And so I just need to calculate the gradient of this times the gradient of y alpha prime, and then lots of covariant derivatives. And all things magically cancel. There is no Ricci tensor because of the antisymmetry. And you get a very simple answer. Where, so the structure constants of formed by the thing which you usually forget, the x minus, are very simple. I could in 5 minutes derive it. I usually, if I talk about it, I do it, but now there's only 8 more minutes or 9. And then, so I just give the answer. So the answer is mu beta minus u gamma over mu alpha times d alpha beta gamma. That's the d symbol of volume preserving diffeomorphisms, which is simply integral y alpha, y beta, y gamma, rho dm phi. In the membrane case, this would become, in the matrix approximation, the usual d symbol of SUN. Okay, so these are just numbers. We have these eigenfunctions, kinematics. They have nothing to do with dynamics. We calculate them, and then the eigenvalues of the Laplacian enter. And if you look at it for m equals 1, you get the Virasoro. After multiplying each L alpha by some alpha-dependent term, like square root of mu alpha or so. Okay, so this is higher dimensional generalization, but there's one exception. You see the alpha, beta, gamma, epsilon indices are non-zero modes. So they go from 1 to infinity. So there's no L0 here. And the ordinary, oscillator business actually mixes. That's also why you never see this linear term in these proceedings of summer schools or introductions to string theory. Because everything is put into oscillators, and you always find the sense it's convenient to put zeta 0 or x big X minus into this 0 mode. But they have a completely different origin. The L0 has to do with this level matching condition, which is the generator of volume-preserving diffeomorphisms, which in the string case is just rotations. And that enters here through this sign. So when I write this, I calculate always modulo volume-preserving diffeomorphisms. If you include all the terms, there are more terms here. And okay, now what? Many subtleties to get this right. Yeah, many more papers. I always forget to mention. More literature. So if you want this, this generalizes to the super case. And that's also on the web. That's a joint paper with Sundin Lundholm, who's here for 3 months, Douglas, and Jonas de Wool on JHAP. So if you are interested in the supersymmetric generalization of this, we also did with these authors, Douglas Lundholm and Jonas de Wool, we formalized this Hamiltonian reduction. And I also discussed, both alone and together with Maciek Trzylewski, the matrix approximation of this. Now that's interesting because it's an open, well, most people again would say closed topic, but it's not completely obvious that the in the membrane case, M equals 2, that the matrix approximation of this is not Lorentz invariant. It's 99% like that, but so, and the problem is this zeta. The matrix zeta is very tough. I have a nice expression. I have a I found a matrix version of this zeta. Namely, so the zeta alpha tilde, which is the non, is actually has an expression like this: d alpha beta gamma plus d alpha beta gamma times x beta p gamma. And apart from this nice, algebra part, these are very interesting objects.
Tilde means dividing by the square root of max squared.
Sorry?
Tilde means divide by the square root
no.
of max squared.
No. Bad. I knew it when I.
Yeah.
No. The tilde meant leaving out the zero modes. Here. No zero modes. So. It's in another way, this is a generalization of what's it called? Virial theorem. It's dilation operator, x dot p. It's linear in x, linear in p, but non-local. And it has fantastic properties. And I derived, for instance, properties how this transforms the Hamiltonian density in the m-dimensional case. And you get formulas like 3, I forgot now, d alpha beta gamma. Maybe the 3 goes here, I don't know. H gamma plus 4 m squared delta alpha beta. And I algebraized this calculation. The big question is now the quantum theory. And there, last remarks. So I thought now I'd start with these expressions. So I write my mi minus as xi alpha h tilde alpha minus pi alpha times zeta alpha tilde. And then I calculate the individual commutators. This with this, this with h with h, zeta with zeta, that's why I need this. H with zeta is highly non-trivial but very nice formula. Not easy to derive. And so now, quantum theory, well, maybe it works if you order x times h plus h times x, p times zeta plus zeta times p. You plug it in. And what I had expected is that I get on the right-hand side some stuff, which, when I order it, produces anomalies or, I mean, that's the calculation which would work only in 20s in for the bosonic string should work only in 26 dimension. And to my surprise, I didn't find it. I brought paper, put it on the net. So I just blindly took the expressions and I do lots of tricks. Of course I know where the danger is. It's these terms where I argue them to be zero although they are infinite sums. Now, even in the string case, by the way, that argument with oscillators is a little bit tricky. Green-Schwarz-Witten doesn't give it. They say at the critical point, they say, the real argument with oscillators is astonishingly subtle and we refrain from giving it here. Of course, there is an argument with this normal ordering and you do something and you get the right result. But if you do it with X and P, it doesn't work. And the crux is where you start. The problem, even in the string case, I worked this out with Stefan Friedenhagen now, or I'm more he than me, but we worked together. For the string case, you have to really do subtractions and distributions and so on to define the object you start with. And I don't know what. So in the higher dimensional case, If you naively work with X and P, you don't get any. You get this result. And so to do operator product expansion in higher dimensional field theories is of course very difficult, and I'm unfortunately not an expert in it.
But didn't Mark White and Scholl,
sorry,
whatever, they have a paper on anomalies, precisely in this committee, many years ago.
They did
well.
Right, it is worth looking at these old papers again. I also did, of course.
They found something funny happens with P equals 27.
Right, but it's, I would say, not really
decisive. A lot of cancellations and things. But not everything cancels, but there are a whole lot of things.
Is
that bosonic membrane?
A bosonic membrane.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so I want to finish now with the following thing. In any case, I think that this algebraic structure will be useful because, precisely because we don't know how to quantize things, the algebra could be a guideline to do something. So, thank you for your attention, and I hope there are questions.
Well, I just wanted, this is more of an interruption, a postponed interruption question, because you wrote down this thing, Virasoro algebra and so on, m equals 1, and you said, everything is taken modulo the volume-preserving diffeomorphisms, but the Virasoro is the volume-preserving diffeomorphisms. I thought you were doing. So what are these LLs? I mean, Virasoro is volume-preserving diffeomorphisms for string. It's not volume.
Full diffeomorphism. Full diffeomorphism.
Volume-preserving
diffeomorphism is just L0.
That's right, the full one. Oh, I see. Yeah, so this is what's left after you take it out.
I'm working modulo L0. So I don't
put L0 here.
So my algebra for the higher dimension
doesn't have the zero modes, and it doesn't get zero modes on the right-hand side if I work modulo volume-preserving diffeomorphism. I can put them in, and I wrote a paper with a young PhD student who just came, Mariusz Hünek, it's also on the web, where we worked out the full diffeomorphism algebra for the n equals 2 case with all the terms, harmonic vector fields, area divergence-free, and rotation-free. But how to solve, it would be so nice. I find it so tempting. This operator is not so bad. It's p squared plus, it's cleanly separated, xp. And you just have to make some sense of it.
Future work and Douglas.
In this, you mentioned this diffeomorphism versus. So, is in the membrane case, would this the corresponding Virasoro algebra, is that then the full diffeomorphism algebra modulo the volume preserving?
Well, these ones, let's call them phi alpha. These are the generators of. Part of the generators of area-preserving diffeomorphisms. Then there are harmonic vector fields. So m equals 2. I just go here, sorry, because of my bet. I cannot write it down. Then there are objects which are of the form g alpha beta dr alpha beta x alpha p beta, where r goes from 1 to twice the genus of the membrane. So nothing for the sphere, 2 of them for the torus, and so on. And this one is something like integral y alpha napla a y beta times a harmonic vector field. And on a surface of genus G, there are precisely 2G harmonic vector fields. So these H vector fields are both divergence-free
and curl free.
And so let me call those
HR.
So the full
diffeomorphism algebra of a two-dimensional surface
has
as generators GL alphas. You see, this is a vector field which is precisely not divergence-free.
Napla A of this is a plus of Y alpha. It's precisely Y alpha.
So this is a vector field at hat A which has divergence a minus Y alpha. So it's not zero.
Then there are the ones which have divergence free, that's the constraints,
and then there are these harmonic ones.
And then you can calculate the full commutator algebra of this, this, and this.
And this we did Mario Schinek and I.
Yeah.
So this quantum theory, yeah, it was so nice to think of the spectrum of the extended object just as the input can only be the topology of this object. And that will go into how these things decompose into finite dimensional irreducible representation of that compact Mie algebra. But how to get it?
One should of course first start with the string.
Try to do it for the string. Whether it
and but the problem, compared
to the hydrogen atom, it's the same algebra, but infinitely more complicated,
because we have infinitely many ingredients which enter this.
And even in the hydrogen atom, where you calculate the spectrum algebraically, following Pauli,
without solving the differential equation, when you divide by in the hydrogen atom,
You
also divide by
square root of minus h.
So the Hamiltonian is negative in the hydrogen atom case. And so minus h corresponds to m squared. And formally, this is also ill-defined. Square root of minus h is a differential operator.
What do you mean by that?
People do it and it works. But somehow one has to... The topology sits here, the Green's function, because it knows G involves the eigenfunctions, and the eigenfunctions know about, do I talk about a spherical membrane, a toroidal membrane, or what? Do I talk a three-dimensional surface, five-dimensional? And somehow here,
this enters. But how to extract it, I don't know. I would love to say.
This SOD minus one, you do not associate with being Lorentz symmetry in space-time.
Well, M squared, the Lorentz invariance is a statement that M squared, of course, an important ingredient of this is that M squared commutes with all I wrote here. And it also commutes
with M plus minus and MI plus.
Okay, so it is the Lorentz.
So MI plus and
M plus minus just involves eta and 0, 0, and MI plus is something like... tau times integral xi or something minus. And those together form the inhomogeneous Poincaré, together with the total momentum, form the inhomogeneous Poincaré algebra, which all classically commutes with M squared. That's what Goldstone showed. And the problem is to make sense of this quantum mechanically. And by the way, I looked at the literature and
yeah, okay, time is over.
Do we have any further questions? Yeah. If not, we thank him again.